evening. What do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Friends, welcome back to another episode of the Amber May Show. I'm so glad you joined me today because I have a man running for mayor and his name is Shane Krauser, but he has such an incredible background. He taught at the collegiate level. He was a prosecutor. And we're going to get into the fundamentals of what is our Constitution and what are the fundamental things that most people believe in. And we're going to get into that on today's show. I hope you'll like, share, and subscribe. This will be a great episode, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. So please like, share, and subscribe. If you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. And the easiest way to do that is going to theambermayshow.com, hit the donate button, and donate whatever you feel you can donate. Or you can be a $5 monthly subscriber by going to theambermayshow.locals.com. That really helps support our program. I always add more content. Join me on Telegram at The Amber May Show. I'm on True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, or Clout Hub. Find me in those locations. But I want you to go visit thecommandersartist.com. He has artwork that is gorgeous. He is a veteran, and he has made beautiful patriotic art. And I want you to go check it out. And when you use promo code AMBER, you're going to save money at checkout. So go check out thecommandersartist.com. And use promo code AMBER at checkout. Well, without any further ado, I'd love to welcome Shane to the program. I have Shane Krauser joining us today on the program. I'm so excited to have you. I can't wait to dive into the topic today. So welcome, Shane, to the program.
Amber, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Now, I do want to talk about your mayoral campaign that you have going on. But before that, I want to get to know who Shane is. You had a great message when we met last time. I want to get to know a little bit more about you and have my audience get to know you. So tell me more about who Shane is and how you got to wanting to even run for mayor.
Well, I'm born and raised in the Phoenix area. I was born in Tempe, raised in Mesa. I've been in Gilbert, Arizona for the last 25 years. My wife and I have been married almost 30 years. We have 6 children. Our oldest is 28. Our youngest is 14. So we've got 5 boys and a little girl on the tail end. And, my wife and I, we took the conventional route. We went to school. I did my undergraduate work at Arizona State. I went to law school at the University of Utah. Sun Devil fan. I went to law school at the University of Utah, finished up there, and I came right back down to Phoenix. I was a prosecutor with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office for 12 years. I then transitioned out of there and went to work for a private firm, and I was a partner there for a couple of years. And then I retired around 2014. And for the last 10 years, I've just been involved in some other things that I'm very passionate about, namely liberty, and just writing a lot about rule of law, politics, what it means to be free, the American experiment, I believe in the whole idea of American exceptionalism. So just been doing a lot of traveling all over the country, up into Canada, down into Latin America, and have very much enjoyed the journey. And then about a year and a half ago, a former councilman, former Gilbert Town councilman, approached me and asked me if I would be willing to run for mayor. And I told him no. And that went on for several months. And then finally, after about 6-7 months of having a number of different discussions, I made the decision that I'd throw my hat in the ring for Gilbert mayor. And it has been it's been an exceptional run. It's been inspiring. It's been motivating. It's been exciting to watch people get excited about what potentially could happen and how we could create a model here in the town of Gilbert that could potentially be looked at by other cities and towns throughout the country. So it's more than just, hey, let's take care of health, safety, and infrastructure within the town. It's could we do something that could have far-reaching effects? So it's been an exciting journey.
You know, just, I'm making an assumption here, but I'm going to assume you're a Christian nationalist. And if that's true of you, then, you know, MSNBC was saying, you know, there's the Christians, but you better watch out for the Christian nationalists. Did you see that clip at all?
I didn't see that. Nope.
So I guess if that is true of you, if you are a Christian, then you are a threat to what they are perceiving as their democracy. But I think it's a Hegelian dialect. I don't think when they say it's a threat to democracy, I think it's just what they're trying to say is a threat to our power. Or it's a threat to our globalism. And when you came, when I met you, you had told us that you were a former professor at the community college, correct?
Yes, that's right.
What was your experience like? Share with me a little bit about your experience teaching at the collegiate level.
So I taught at the collegiate level for over a decade. I taught at two different colleges here in the Phoenix area, and I taught constitutional law, criminal justice, criminal procedure, even a little business law at the very beginning. But my experience was nothing short of exceptional. And what I mean by that was the students that I was teaching, there was a broad demographic. I had individuals coming in that had experienced abject poverty to upper middle class, white, black, Hispanic, Native American. They had come from all walks of life, individuals that had experienced violence in their neighborhood all growing up, gang-ridden territory too, individuals that had experienced none of that. And so in the classroom was really an amazing experience because I was very Socratic in the way that I taught. I would allow the students to discuss and debate. But when I taught constitutional law, which by the way, was my favorite course to teach, that was really fun to be involved with because very seldom did my students know where I stood, at least at the beginning of any particular debate, because I wanted the students to arrive at their own conclusions. But one of the things that I did at the very beginning, which you heard me talk about a couple of weeks ago, was I would, at the very beginning of the class, I would ask some questions that were really, really designed to dive into who they are as human beings. What do they believe foundationally? Things like leave me alone. And, you know, do you believe government should follow the rules? It was those kinds of questions, which as we started to dive into other topics, First Amendment free speech, First Amendment free exercise of religion, Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, Fourth Amendment, leave me alone, Fifth and Sixth Amendment, due process protections. As we started to dive into those topics, what I found was this. Many of the students came to the classroom with some preconceived notions. They had already bought into certain ideas, but they had never been forced to analyze those ideas through this idea of leave me alone, right? Which is, I think, foundational to who we are as human beings. We all want to be left alone, but I had these students coming in to the classroom with some very warped ideas about the way the world operates, crazy ideas about the role of government, interesting ideas about who we are as human beings. But when I started the discussion, the very beginning of our semester, with questions like, hey, do you want to be left alone? Do you believe that you can live your life better than government can? And every student over the course of, you know, over a decade agreed with that principle. So that allowed me to do some amazing things when we would dive into specific topics and they'd start to go off the rails a little bit. And I said, wait a second, let's talk about this issue for a moment. Because on the first day of class, you told me you wanted to be left alone. But here you are advocating a position that revolves around you telling other people how to live their lives. Help me understand. And it was this massive transformation that happened with these students. And it wasn't me telling them what to do. It was just, wait a second, I've never thought about this issue through this idea of leave me alone. But yet that's what I believe in foundationally. And it was an amazing experience because whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, a libertarian, an independent, these sorts of ideas that I talk about quite often supersede politics. And I love that it has the ability to bring people together. And as we bring people together on a common foundation, we can get to where we want to go more efficiently. And you know, we don't have to do a lot of this. Listen, I understand there's a time and a place to fight. And I do enjoy the debate. But I don't even want to get to the debate until I've established where are we foundationally. Do we agree with certain principles or do we agree on certain principles? Because if we don't agree on certain foundational principles, we're never going to agree on some of these other issues that we find ourselves fighting about. So my experience with these college students was an amazing blessing in my life. Well, I learned a lot.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you really are so passionate about that. And it was really intriguing, the things that you were telling us in the meeting. So I'd be curious to know, like, what are some of the things that these students brought up to you in class where you were able to reframe the way of thinking by the three simple principles that you have laid out just now, which I think is brilliant. Most people do want the government to stay out of our business. We can run our lives better than they can. We do want to be able to keep our own money. And then what was the third one?
So number one was leave me alone. Number two is government follow the rules. And number three is we should be able to keep the fruits of our labor.
Because after that, I'm going to follow up with another question about your second principle. But what are some of the things that came up in class that you were able to work through? Because I think this is important. What we're seeing on the collegiate level in your classrooms, it's a microcosm of what is in the macro society. So I think finding out what you were dealing with in class might help us better communicate on the macro level in our cities and our counties and state and so on.
Yeah. So, you know, we spent 16 weeks together. And so I was diving into many, many topics, and we were not, it wasn't me just lecturing from a podium. It was diving into the topic and giving a hypothetical around that particular issue and then allowing the students to debate. So we were discussing anything from the rule of law and the parameters of the Constitution itself, free speech, things like flag burning and so-called hate speech, to the free exercise of religion and what an individual should be able to do without government interfering under the umbrella of religious freedom, to the right to bear arms, to due process protections, to you name it. So I'll give you one example that comes to mind that I really enjoyed was Fourth Amendment. You know, Fourth Amendment it outlines that you and I are to be protected, our houses, our persons, our papers and effects. And if government wants to identify, discover, search what it is that we have, whether it's in our car, whether it's in our house, it's in our pocket, there are certain rules that have to be followed. And so I would bring up hypotheticals around a very dangerous situation, at least from the outsider looking in, say, well, this is a bad guy, right? This is a bad guy. Why are we offering all these due process protections? We know he's a bad guy. Let's go in and do this. And as we were able to walk through some of these things, I think about this whole concept of government must follow the rules. Many of them, they would come into this discussion with, well, wait a second, rules are to be followed, but this is an exception. This is a bad guy. But when you start to allow this discussion to unfold, what they started to realize is, well, wait a second. If I don't mandate that government follows the rules under these circumstances, what does that mean when I'm on the firing line? What does it mean when I'm being investigated and I'm absolutely innocent? I've done nothing wrong. You know, what does it mean when I'm pulled over and government's saying, we know you've got something in that car? Should they follow the rules then? What happens when they showed up to your mom's house and you've done nothing wrong, but they suspicion that something's going, should they not have to follow the rules then? So the idea is we follow the rules. We want government to follow the rules because of what we've learned historically governments ultimately do. And that's always in a fascinating discussion with these students. Well, wait a second. What is it that happens with governments historically when there are no rules to be followed? In other words, they make the rules as they go. What happens? Well, on one extreme, people die. And on the other extreme, there is no freedom. There's no freedom at all. And so this was one of those things where they said, wait a second, this does make sense. I've never really thought about this. I've got a guy who appears to be guilty, but if I don't mandate that government follows the rules with the guilty guy right here, right? Chaos breaks loose. Tyranny breaks loose. Another example is things like flag burning. That was always a fascinating discussion with my students. And we talk about whether or not flag burning was protected speech. And that was a pretty even divide. When we would go into the discussion, it was 50% on one side and 50% on the other, generally speaking. And as we get going, I start to hear hints of, well, you know what? You just shouldn't do that. You just shouldn't do that. That's a bad idea. Right. You just shouldn't do that. And I would stop and say, wait a second. There's a difference between saying a person shouldn't do that and a person is violating someone else's life, liberty, or property.
100%. There's a difference between morality and rights. You know, I don't think it's morally ethical to burn a flag, but is it violating your rights if I tell you not to?
Right. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And so I would, you, we would, as a student would get rolling, I'd stop him and say, wait a second. I have to ask you about your position, because remember on day one, I asked you whether or not you wanted to be left alone. Yes, sir. What did you say? Well, I said, I wanted to be left alone. Do you remember me asking you about government following the rules? Yes, sir. What did you say? I said, government should follow the rules. Well, help us all understand this, because your position right now revolves around you telling other people how to behave and is a deviation from the rule book, in this case being the First Amendment's protection of free speech. So explain to us how you're arriving at this conclusion, given that you told us your foundation is leave me alone and government follow the rules, right? It was this, it truly was this crazy, amazing transformation that I watched happen right in front of me without me indoctrinating. I wasn't indoctrinating. I was just bringing them back to foundational principles that we all believe in.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. Hey, so when you are a guest at the Amber Mae's house, you get luxury. And how you get luxury is I have this sleeping couch, this sleeper sofa, and you're telling me that's not luxury. It is when you put a MyPillow mattress topper on it. All my guests that have come over and stayed at my house have really enjoyed this sleeper sofa, which says a lot because they're getting to sleep on the MyPillow pillows, and you get the MyPillow mattress topper, and then it doesn't stop there with the luxury, because when you shower at the Anna Mae Show's house, you get to have a MyPillow towel. I don't have the kids using it. I just let the adults have the luxury. So the adults get to use the MyPillow and they're phenomenal. And right now there's a massive sale going on with the MyPillow towels. So you should really put luxury into your home and live it every day like Amber Mae does every day. So I have a MyPillow mattress topper on my bed. I use the MyPillow sheets, the MyPillow towels, MyPillow slippers. I live luxury, and I don't have to pay the luxury price because MyPillow has promo code. So use my name, Amber, and save up to 66% off, and you can live luxurious as well.
Hey, I'm Christina Bob, and you are listening to The Amber Mae Show.
Hey, friends. New variants means new vaccines and even more scare tactics. You know, Dr. Peter McCullough gets asked all the time, how do I get this out of my body? Well, Spike Support Formula is the only product I've seen that contains ingredients researched to block and dissolve COVID spike protein in the bloodstream. Whether you've got the shot, you're watching research pour in about vaccine shedding, or you've had a bad bout of COVID, Spike Support is a serious concern. And while we won't truly know the extent of the devastating effects for many years, there is something you can do right now to protect yourself. Hundreds of people, vaccinated or not, have reported better mental clarity and increased energy levels. Head to twc.health/AmberMae to buy the wellness company's Spike Support formula and get back to feeling your best. Use promo code AmberMae at checkout and you will save some money. So that's twc.health/AmberMae to save some money at checkout. You are listening to The Amber Mae Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
And
led to that revolution in your classroom. Were these kids, do you believe, were being indoctrinated into believing something other than government?
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at most of my students. So the age range with my students was, I think my youngest student was 17. My oldest student was 84. The average age of my student typically fluctuated between 18 and 25, right? It's younger individuals coming right out of high school and pursuing a career, many of them in law enforcement, many wanted to go to law school. So understanding where they were coming from, it was 40,000 hours of compelled education. But most of them were coming through our public schools. Mm-hmm. And as a result of coming through the public schools, I can assure you, and I think you know this, Amber, I don't need to tell you this, most of them had never had in-depth discussions about what the rule book is that government's supposed to follow. They had never had real discussions about the rule of law and the Constitution and why that's so important. They had never dove in and really had this debate about American exceptionalism. They had never had any of these discussions, social issues and otherwise, around the idea of, well, I want to be left alone and you want to be left alone. How do we negotiate this within a society where people want to be left alone? They'd never been they'd never intellectually been challenged on this issue or even been introduced to the idea. So I knew for all of those years that I spent teaching that they were coming in with a worldview that I didn't necessarily agree with, but it wasn't my job in that class to tell them they were right or wrong necessarily. It was my job to facilitate the discussion. And the amazing thing about this, Amber, is most of my students came in with these crazy ideas, warped ideas, and yet they left 16 weeks later where they'd experienced transformations to the point where I still hear from. I taught students started back in 2004. I still hear from those students today. Because of the impact that was had in the classroom. And during the time I was teaching, Amber, you'll appreciate this. During the time I was teaching, so I was practicing law during the day. I would teach at night from 7 to 10. And very rarely did I ever get out of the parking lot before midnight. The students were so enthralled in the subject matter. And many of them felt duped and wanted to understand, why have I never heard these things before? Why have I never heard these simple principles before? And then the question became, how do I take this back to my family? How do I take this back to my neighborhood? How do I take this back to my people? And it was really inspiring for me to be involved in that sort of experiment, if you will, where you saw lives transformed, at least intellectually, in some pretty phenomenal ways.
And how would you answer them when they asked you, how do I take this back to their friends and family? How'd you answer it?
That's a great question, Amber. And I'm a big believer. People often ask me, Shane, I want to learn to advocate liberty. I want to do what you do. And I have to say, I am very blessed to be able to do this for a living. I've been doing it for a long time and I love it. They said, well, what book should I read? Like, what do I need to read to really understand these things? I said, listen, if you really want to be a liberty advocate and you want to do it at a high level where you're impacting a lot of people wherever you go, the number one book for you to read is How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter how much you know if you don't know how to connect with people. And I'm not interested in just being involved in echo chambers where individuals agree with me. I want to be involved in those echo chambers, but sure. I also want to be able to reach out and have conversations beyond those individuals that agree with me.
Yeah.
And so I would tell them, hey, number one, you've got to be able to connect with people. And so I would kind of take them on this journey. Hey, listen, here's some things I'd recommend to learn how to connect with people. And then as you learn to connect with those people in your families, in your communities, to the point where you're not a threat when you arrive at a Thanksgiving dinner, right? That's kind of my barometer. If people are concerned about you arriving at the Thanksgiving dinner, we got some work to do, right? But when I go to a Thanksgiving dinner, everybody knows me as the leave me alone guy. He's the leave me alone guy. Like, he's my guy. Like, he's not going to come in here and sit around telling me what to do and how I need to live my life and how I better get on board with this. He's the leave me alone guy. And there's an element of trust there. And because there's that element of trust, I can have very open and honest conversations with individuals, even with those who adamantly might disagree with me on some of these other issues, right? Maybe on the border issue or just some of the other issues that we deal with as a culture, election integrity and those sorts of things. We might disagree on some of these things, but I can always come back and they can always come back to leave me alone. And what are the rules that government's supposed to be following? Okay, well, let's have that debate. And as we establish that foundation together, we can get back to the issues that we might disagree on and maybe arrive at an agreement. So those were some of the things that I talked to them about. You got to be able to relate to people along the way. And then, hey, let's talk about how to really understand these principles in a way that can connect with the average individual. So it was a journey. It's not something you teach someone to do in an hour. It's a journey. Are you willing to dedicate your life or at least a portion of your life to really learning how to do this effectively?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. And so given your stance on government, leave me alone, but more importantly, government, follow the rules. Let's talk about what's happening today. Are you noticing the two-tier justice system in our country?
When you talk about a two-tier justice system, what are you referring to?
Well, you look at people like, for instance, we just had a guy who was a whistleblower for Joe Biden, and a judge released him. Within 24 hours, he was back in jail again. Then you see a CBS reporter who was talking about the Joe Biden and his son and the laptop and crimes. And she had whistleblowers in her back pocket, you know, not back pocket as in a bad thing, but just like as a journalism, you have your sources, right? And so she wouldn't give up her sources. So they fired her and they wouldn't let her take any of her items with her. So they confiscate a lot of her material. And then you see things that are happening. For instance, we know Joe Biden had documents and he wasn't the president at the time. He was a vice president or a senator, and he had classified documents in his possession. Yet we have a president who can have the authority to declassify information, and they go and raid his home. Then you have the January Sixers who have the right to protest their government for redress of grievances. And we have the right to due process. However, these people are like 3 years later is still in federal prison. Like, these are the things that I'm looking at. And I'm just like, huh. So are you seeing a two-tier justice system? I'm just curious because your perspective is different than mine. So I'm just curious.
No, I am. There is certainly the wielding of political power to punish political enemies. And that is not in line with simple 14th Amendment protections that say equal application of the law. Another way of saying equal application of the law is government doesn't get to pick winners and losers. And right now, this is what we're seeing. And I mean, we've never seen, I just look at President Trump. It doesn't matter whether you like President Trump or not. See, I'm an equal opportunity hater. It doesn't matter if you have an R or a D behind your name, an L or an I. Those things are irrelevant when it comes to the application of the law. And right now, what we're seeing is, well, hey, if you're a Democrat and you're in power and I have a political enemy over here that has an R behind his name, I will potentially use the political power that I currently have to punish you, to make life more difficult, maybe even send you to prison. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that we don't see this on the other side where the Republicans do the same thing, because it would be equally as wrong. But I think there can be no question right now at various levels of government that this is happening. The wielding of power to punish political enemies. This is antithetical to who we are as Americans. It's antithetical to the American experiment. The founding fathers would be rolling over in their graves, or certainly are rolling over in their graves, to watch this sort of thing unfold. And I think this goes to a bigger issue, Amber, and that issue is we've got to get serious about who we're putting into office. Too often I show up to the ballot box and I say, well, he has an R behind his name. Let's click all the boxes. And we're not doing our homework before we go to the ballot box. We're not even doing our homework as we go about identifying candidates that should be running. I mean, it can't be just, hey, is he a nice guy? I mean, that's a great starting point. But does he understand the rule of law? What is his history? Will he apply the law equally? Is he for sale? Or is he going to bow down to individuals that are willing to give him money and say, hey, if I give you money, I need to have you on the phone if I need you to move forward with an agenda if I want it. We need to get that out where you have people that, I say it this way, we need men and women of God that are loyal, not to just other people around them, right? Not loyal to individuals around them. I mean, it's fine to be respectful, but loyal to higher principles. And as you're loyal to higher principles and you're loyal to the oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, and actually understand what that means, this is how you get the country back on track. Because what we're seeing right now is all of this chaos and unfolding. And you're praying that you're not on the firing line with a political enemy that currently holds power, right? That's what people are praying for. Like, oh no, what's next? And so I just think it's so unfortunate what is happening. You know, whether it's with President Trump.
It happened at the highest level with a former president. But it happened to regular everyday people that got an FBI knock on the door, or just like the reporter, you know, who was just reporting, because that's what I went to journalism school for. I wanted to be the fourth, quote unquote, branch of the government, keeping the government accountable to the people. That's why I desired to even get into media, and to find out, you know, that the media, that if you're on the opposite side and you are talking about one political candidate, that they can have you fired and take all of your documents and try to find all your sources. I just think that goes against the constitution of a free media. So, yeah. I mean, it's so frustrating because I feel on every front, they have taken our medical freedoms away. Like we talked about just briefly with the education system, they're teaching us what to think, not how to think. Where in your classroom, you were teaching your students how to think, not what to think. How do I get to this conclusion? What are the steps? Making them articulate why they believe the way they do about that. But you, and then you would say, but you just said earlier, this is what you believe. So they don't, so you were teaching your students how to think, not what to think. However, they came into your classroom with what to think, not how to think. So you were undoing a lot of the things that was done in the public school. So we have the captured public school. We have the, and I've just interviewed a couple of doctors who had their papers, medical journals are retracting their well-finding peer-reviewed study papers because it goes against the narrative of Big Pharma. So you have captured Big Pharma with our FDA or CDC, so medicines captured. You have education captured. Now you're looking at the political aspect of what we just talked about where people are going against the opposite party and they're using their power to do so. And it's overwhelming at times.
Yeah.
But that's what I love about what you're doing, Shane, because you're teaching us how us as regular everyday people can be united. And I think all of us can get united and stand behind, like, we want our government. I don't care if there is a D or an R next to your name, following the rules. Yeah. If you are selling out government with your political office, you don't deserve to be in office. I want my Fourth Amendment right where you have to get a warrant. You can't just show up at my door and have a search and seizure without a proper warrant. I want to be able to have a free media. I want to have my right to free speech, which they banned on YouTube. They took me off YouTube. So I'm just a regular everyday person that has been affected by the political change happening in our country. Why did they take me off of YouTube? Why do they censor me on Facebook? You know what I mean? Like, why are they shadow banning me on social media? Because I have a different viewpoint. Isn't that America to have a different viewpoint? So someone like you, I respect because you love our country. I am gravitated towards men and women who are running for office that love our country. Mm-hmm. And when I met you, that's what you exude, that you love our country. That's why, you know, I have favored Donald Trump because he exudes that to me. Now, to some, he turns off. Okay, that's fine. Your opinion, he turns you off. But to me, when I look at that man, I hear him, and when I hear you speak, and when I hear some of my representatives speak locally, that love our country, I am gravitated towards those people because I love my country.
Okay, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
In the early 1900s, like in 1920s, 30s, with $20, you used to be able to buy an entire men's suit. You could get the handkerchief, the tie, the vest, the jacket, the pants, the belt, everything. And you could also buy that with a piece of gold. Now, in today's standards, you can't buy much with $20, maybe a tie, maybe that's it. You could not even come close to an entire men's suit with a $20 bill. However, if you still had a piece of gold, you could still buy an entire men's suit with that piece of gold. See, silver and gold have intrinsic value, and it's had intrinsic value since the beginning of time. It's always been a currency around since the existence of man, gold and silver. So why not protect your investments and protect your earning power by owning some gold and silver? And the easiest way to do that is contacting Jim Tewell at EPSWealthManagement.com. That's Edward Paul Sam, WealthManagement.com, EPSWealthManagement.com. Give him a call and let him know you'd like them to have some tangible assets in your portfolio. You'd like to have some gold and silver, and he can help you do that. So if you're ready to protect yourself and protect your investments, then go ahead and give Jim Tewell a call, whom you've seen on our program at EPSWealthManagement.com. Let him know Amber May sent you.
Hey there, I'm Darren.
And I'm Randy.
We're from Patriots with Grit, and you're watching The Amber May Show.
Check it out.
Hey friends, I want to tell you what I recently did. I broke away from the big three. I was tired of the woke mogul, and I wanted to go to a Christian conservative company that I could trust that support the organizations that I value, and that is Patriot Mobile. So when you go to patriotmobile.com/Amber, you are going to get free activation. It is super easy to get started to switch from the big three to Patriot Mobile. They'll walk you step by step. It is not difficult at all. And I've had tremendous service since I made the switch. So I recommend if you want to vote with your wallet and support a company that supports your values, go to patriotmobile.com/Amber and save on a free activation. So that's patriotmobile.com/Amber. Now the links are in the description below or on my website at theambermayshow.com/promo. So check that out. So it's time to vote with our wallet, ditch the woke mobile, and go to a Christian conservative mobile. And that is patriotmobile.com/Amber. You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
Well, you know, man, you said a lot there. I really appreciate it. You know, I go back to one of the points that you made about this whole idea of individuals' voices being suppressed. The whole idea, as you just said, Amber, the whole idea behind America the Idea is the free exchange of ideas. And it's not just the free exchange of ideas. It's the vigorous exchange of ideas. Why would we ever suppress ideas that we disagree with? You know, the next point is to your as an example, is to this whole medical freedom issue. You know, I find this fascinating. I was in an interview yesterday with a group out here in Gilbert. You know, they're looking at it, supporting various candidates. And they asked me about the lockdowns and they asked me about masks. And it was interesting because some of the individuals in that discussion, I knew fundamentally disagreed with me, at least at the outset, because I just was very clear. I said, you know, I was very opposed to a lockdown, especially when you're telling private businesses how to behave, right? The marketplace should decide this. Mm-hmm. And so if there is a concern, let's let this business over here who says, you know what? I'm going to lock down. You know what? We're going to protect your right to lock down if you wish. Mm-hmm. You're concerned. We're going to let you make those decisions as a free human being. And as a business owner, you get to make that decision. But then you have this individual over here says, well, I want to stay open, but I'm going to require a mask. You have the freedom to do that. And this individual over here says, well, I'm going to stay open and anybody can come in at any time. And they don't, no mask required, none of that sort of stuff. That's a free society. And how do we decide whether or not individuals made good or bad decisions? You and I get to make those decisions as people operating within the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So we vote with our feet. But I look at out here in Gilbert, we have seven individuals that sit on a council. How is it that seven people and a majority of those, right? All you need is four. How is it that four individuals can dictate how 250,000 people will behave? You look at a bigger scale. How is it that 535 individuals in Washington, D.C. get to dictate how, you know, 350,000,000 people will behave? Mm-hmm. That is antithetical to freedom. And, you know, I look just to be fair on this medical issue, there are individuals that were legitimately concerned. Here's my concern, though, and it goes right to your point, Amber. There was suppression of ideas and opinions during this process to the point where the masses were believing, oh, there's only one real opinion on this. Mm-hmm. Well, for every doctor that was out there that says, hey, this everybody's going to die, you had doctors that were saying, you know, this is kind of the flu on steroids. Are we going to lose some people? Yeah, we're going to lose some people, but locking them down is not the solution. In fact, that's more dangerous to lock them down as opposed to having them out and about and in the sun and being active and building their immune system. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm all about the marketplace of ideas. Bring the doctors on there that say everybody's going to die. But when you have a diversity of opinions in a free society, we let the marketplace make those decisions, not a few people sitting on a town council or, you know, 535 individuals sitting in DC. And why have we become so fearful of freedom? Why have we become so fearful of the vigorous exchange of ideas to the point where we suppress ideas? I mean, you just mentioned, Amber, Facebook and all of this social media. We now have evidence that the government was colluding with, not just colluding, giving money to suppress ideas where individuals were posting things on Twitter and Facebook. Was shutting down those ideas. They were in cahoots with the government. How bizarre where the government's job is to secure the rights of the people, they were now suppressing ideas that would allow individuals to make really informed decisions along the way. I'm just concerned about the direction we're going. And we just need more enlightened individuals that understand what's at stake and are willing to be a little bit of a square peg in a round hole along the way, to stand for the right principles, to stand for truth. And as we stand for those things, I'm convinced the masses will start to gravitate to these things because we've simply forgotten about them because people are tied into mass media and they're hearing the wrong ideas. But when you and I sit down and talk about leave me alone, why is it that every human being agrees with that idea, but nobody's talking about it? We've got to resurrect that idea and start to have this discussion once again about what we really want as human beings.
You know, as you taught Constitution to your students and as you practice law in your life, we have to understand that the Constitution is a restriction on what the government can do to us. And on CNBC, they were saying how us Christian nationals, how dare we believe that our rights are given by God? No, they were saying the rights are given by government. I'm like, that's not what the founding documents say. Our rights are inherent by God. And that's why we are able to have these rights, because God gave them to us. Man didn't give them to us, because if man gave them to us, man can take them away. Right. But if God gave it to us, man cannot take them away. We can capitulate. We can give them up. But man cannot take the rights away that God gave us. You know, in the beginning of the Bible, the first thing that is done is God spoke. God spoke things into existence in the very beginning. So I think that's why freedom of speech is number one in the amendments, because God spoke things right in the very beginning. So the very first amendment is my right to free speech. And I was a victim of all this stuff that's been happening because my viewpoints contradicted what big government wanted out there in the free marketplace. And I love the idea of what you said about the whole capitalistic society, let the marketplace decide.
Yes.
I am not a doctor to tell you to wear a mask or to get a shot or not get a shot, or, you know, so if I was a business owner, I would leave it up to you whether you wanted to come into my store, whether you wanted to get a shot, whether you wanted to get a mask or not get a mask, because who am I to tell you, especially because I don't have any credentials to tell you to do that stuff. Yet we were having people on a regular basis who A, did not have the credentialing, but B, was trying to interfere in my decisions of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What did I think was right for myself? And you know what? If those businesses that stayed open during COVID, you know, if they were allowed to stay open, if they were allowed to stay open, we just capitulated to the government. Right. I mean, there was nothing that and the churches capitulated to the government. Our freedom of religion, we have the right to believe in whatever we want to believe in. If I want to believe and worship a purple door, then that is my right to worship a purple door. Every day I want to bow down and pray to that purple door, I can. And the government can't shut down. However, the church has capitulated and shut down churches. And you know what? I needed church the most during this time because I was fearful. I saw an election. I saw a color revolution take place in front of my eyes. I saw a government overbearing on what I could do medically. I saw my freedom of speech getting taken away. I mean, I started, my right to vote was like in jeopardy. My freedom of speech was gone. My right to practice religion was gone. I just felt like in one single swoop, all these rights were dwindling away. I'd love your opinion on all that, being a constitutional attorney teaching that. And then we'll get into some of your mayoral races and all that.
Yeah. Stuff. Well, we've forgotten who we are foundationally as Americans. We've forgotten about how unique this American experiment is. We're not talking about the results that have been produced. You know, when we look at all the freedom and prosperity that we experience over the last 200 years, it wasn't in spite of the Constitution. It was because of the Constitution. It was because we had a rule book in place. And that rule book was primarily keep government out of the way and allow the people to thrive in the ways that they wish to thrive. And we've forgotten about the why. You know, the why is found in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator Right? Those freedoms exist by virtue of our humanity. They're not given by, as you mentioned, by government. They're not given by a piece of paper. They're not given by what a majority might say. That's the foundation of the American experiment. That Declaration of Independence is the essence of leave me alone. Leave people alone. And hey, listen, we're not saying government doesn't have a role, but they have one primary role, and that's a limited role, and that's to secure the rights of the people. So we've forgotten about the Declaration, which is the why, and we've forgotten about the Constitution, which is the how. You know, we've forgotten about, you know, the promise, which is our Declaration of Independence. And we've forgotten about how to fulfill that promise, which is the Constitution. Mm-hmm. We've forgotten, you know, the Declaration of Independence is what these men and women were willing to die for. The Constitution was put in place, and that was what they were willing to live for. And we've forgotten about how important these documents are. And, you know, going back to where we started the discussion, when I talk to these young students, I'll go into high school auditoriums and speak to students, and they're like, oh, here come, I guess we're going to listen to this boring guy talk about the Constitution. And then I'll go into this auditorium and I'll bring up 16, 17-year-old kids, and I'll role play with them. I said, I want you to imagine you're in a car and you're driving out of the parking lot, and I'm a police officer and I pull you over, and I just have this little fun exchange with them. I say, I want to search the car. Give me your license and registration. Hey, you got anything in the car I need to be worried about? No, sir. Well, why don't you get out and let me search? And they'll say, well, I'm not going to do that. And now all of these students erupt into a debate. No, you can't let them search. No, you need to let them search. What, are you hiding something? And there's this crazy debate that goes on, and even to the point where teachers get involved. And then I stop them and say, do you know what you all are debating? You're debating the Fourth Amendment. You know that document that you were told was old, outdated, archaic, and evil? We're debating that very rule book, that very rule that's found in the rule book. And again, a massive transformation that goes on just in a few minutes, saying, I guess this is an important document. We're having this discussion about whether or not I have to let government search my car when they have no probable cause to do so. And like you said, I can capitulate. I can give the consent, but I don't necessarily have to if they haven't met the standard. And so anyways, we've got to get back to why America is exceptional. How is it that a country in 200 years created all this massive prosperity? How did we go for thousands of years on horse and buggy, so to speak, and yet in 150 years, we're going from horse and buggy to flying airplanes? Why did not that happen in any other 150-year window in the history of the world? Why was it we just got lucky? No, you had a document that said, leave people alone, let them keep what they earn, and allow people to go out and let marketplace drive the decisions of individuals who have ideas that they're bringing to the table. That's how you create prosperity, get government out of the way. And never before, at least to this degree, had we seen government stay out of the way to the point where people could start to experience prosperity to this degree.
Something I believe in 100% is local action creates national impact. I believe that 100%. That's why I became a precinct committeeman. That's why I've worked with my state legislator to write bills that hopefully will turn into law, because I want to protect rights and the freedoms thereof. And when I said earlier, when I see a candidate that just loves America as much as I do, I gravitate towards that individual. And so I want to see more men and women like yourself run for office. And we often think that local, it really doesn't matter, like your mayoral race or the legislature or the governor. It's all about Washington, always about Washington. No, that's not true. When you really think about it, Washington should have and supposed to have the most limited power of all, because it's local government that has more power. It's state than federal. And so what I love about it is that we need great mayors. You know why we need great mayors? Because when we don't have great mayors, we have a problem like we have in San Luis, Arizona, where someone was convicted of ballot harvesting and is now the vice mayor of San Luis, Arizona. So if we have people that have broken laws that shouldn't be in a place of a political office, then we just have more corruption and more corruption and more corruption. So we'll start on the city level, go to the county level, go to the state level, then go to the federal level. If we have a strong city level and we have a strong county level, and it goes, we will get a strong nation overall. It takes local action, create national impact. We need a strong city government to be able to protect their little citizens in that city so that it can produce a better state, a better county, a better federal. And so I love that you're running for mayor in Gilbert, Arizona. So tell me about your race. Tell me about things you hope to accomplish as being mayor.
Yeah. So number one, right to your point, I agree. Washington, D.C., if we're concerned about getting America back on track and experiencing real freedom and prosperity, Washington, D.C. will not save us. Washington, D.C. is not going to commit suicide. Washington, D.C. is not going to give back to the states that I believe they've illegitimately taken, you know, by way of, you know, the 10th Amendment. I'm concerned about where we're going. And so I believe that the only way that you really get America back on track is focusing on the areas where the founders said we should have been focusing on all along. And that is at the state, county, and local level. And I'm running for mayor because I believe it's, I personally believe it's the most important position right now in all of government. If I believe that DC had a chance at saving us, I would be running for federal office. I'm not interested in wasting the next 4 years of my life on a position that has zero impact. I wanted to go where I need to go. And I was asked to run for mayor. And then when it just all came together, I said, if I'm going to run, this is the most important office to run for, because individuals at the mayoral level are the last line of defense. They're the last line of defense of the people. So my campaign really focuses on two planks. Plank number one is rule of law, ensuring that the federal and state government do not exceed their authority and impact the residents of our town. And then kind of the general things that you think about when you think about a mayor or a town or city council, and that's health, safety, and infrastructure. So to the first point is ensuring that the state and federal government do not exceed their authority and impact the citizens. Let me just give you an easy example to understand how this plays out. Because, by the way, Amber, one of the derogatory things that were thrown my way when I made the announcement I was running for mayor is he's the Constitution guy. Well, I think it's very interesting that over the last several over the last several months, several things have happened in our town that have implicated things like the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, where people are saying, maybe we do need someone in office that understands this stuff. So it's been kind of an interesting, it's been ironic, quite frankly, that what was initially seen as, why is he running for this office too? Yeah, we need somebody like this. So I think about a decision that was made about 4 months ago by the U.S. Supreme Court. For anybody listening, I think this will put the nail in the coffin for understanding why someone at the local level needs to understand the ins and outs of the Constitution. So the Supreme Court made a decision in, it was called Creative LLC was the name of the case. And it involved a website designer. And this website designer refused to create a website for a same-sex couple. Now, it doesn't matter whether it was a same-sex couple. It doesn't matter if it was the website designer was a same-sex couple refusing to create a website designed for a heterosexual couple. It's irrelevant. Freedom says it's irrelevant. And so they refused to do so, and a lawsuit was filed. Now, this case goes all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court says this. The website designer is right. You cannot force an individual to utilize their creative expression in a way that would violate their free speech. In other words, if I've got to communicate a message in what I'm creating for my customer, you cannot force me to communicate a message that I don't agree with. Supreme Court got it right. Well, that same week, our attorney general in Arizona, Chris Mays, said, we are disregarding that U.S. Supreme Court decision, and we will go after business owners that behave in a way that the Supreme Court has condoned. So why did we hear nothing from any mayor? We heard nothing from any mayor, nothing from any town council or city council. We heard nothing from any county official and nothing from any state official. Mm-hmm. If I had been the mayor at that time that she had said this, which, by the way, she's still holding strong to that opinion. You can go onto their website and you can still see the press release that she says, we're disregarding it. We're going after business owners if we have to. I would have made a phone call to her and said, Gilbert's not participating. You do not have the authority to come into our town and execute a law which is now illegal and unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. I would have made a phone call to the governor. I would have talked to the county sheriff, to the county attorney, and then, of course, my police chief and the town attorney. That you got to have all your ducks aligned, but making it very clear, the town of Gilbert is not participating. And I would have called a press conference and said the same thing. We are prepared to utilize our resources to protect our business owners in our town against an attorney general gone rogue. And I would have even made a phone call to the U.S. Department of Justice, the Civil Rights Division. And I would have said, we've got an attorney general that has gone on record as making it very clear she's disregarding the rule of law, and maybe we'll come after business owners. If that happens, DOJ, we are prepared to help our business owners file a action against our attorney general, a 1983 action, a civil rights action, holding her liable for going in. See, this is what mayors should be doing. Yeah. This is called a watchdog. I mean, if it was just about whatever the governor says, the mayors follow, mayors would never take an oath of office. Mm-hmm. But mayors do take an oath of office because there's an expectation that they understand the rule of law and that they can be a check against a state official that may be going off the rails with regard to the rule of law, or even the federal government doing things that impact our town. This is why I think it's the most important position in all of government right now for those that are interested in saving our country. So that's one of my planks. The other plank is, health, safety, and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that primarily is, how do I get government out of the way? And for those duties that government has stepped in and taken some authority over, how do we do it the most efficiently? So this is what I'll close with on this particular issue, and you'll appreciate this, Amber. I've talked about this a lot. Over the last year since I've been campaigning, I've done over 100 events. And when I go in and talk to people, they say, well, how do you see government engaging on the health, safety, and infrastructure? I said, it's very simple. There are two approaches. One approach says this: there is a problem, therefore government should fix it. I disagree with that philosophy. My philosophy is this: there's a problem in our community. Which entity is best situated in our community to address that problem? Mm-hmm. Is it our churches? Is it our charities? Is it private enterprise? Is it the various neighborhoods? See, we've gotten caught in this idea that anytime there's a problem, it's government's job to fix it. And we know historically, Amber, that almost everything the government touches, they create more of a problem. They take more money from the people. But if we could get the private sector involved, we would solve problems more efficiently. We would save the taxpayers a heck of a lot of money. And we would live in this pro-family, pro-freedom community in a way that was originally designed. Mm-hmm. And so, I am a believer that there are certain functions for government legitimately. Securing the rights, police and fire are certainly legitimate functions. And, right now in Gilbert, we have some real issues with concerns about crime. And, I've talked a lot about those issues. But those are my two general planks. And it's gaining a lot of traction. People are so excited about the vision. They see something unique. In fact, I had one current Arizona state legislature that gave me pretty good kudos. I got to give myself a pat on the back. He says, Gilbert has not seen a mayor of this caliber in 40 to 50 years. And I think that speaks to what I bring to the table. It's not just the general, hey, this just makes sure we're putting things in the right place and we're building parks in the right place. That's a part of it. But what about the rule of law and protecting the people? We haven't had that in very, very few cities. Very few cities have experienced this. And I want to be on the forefront. I want to be a warrior, a watchdog on the forefront, establishing model here for what other mayors should be doing throughout the country.
Well, I love that. And Shane, if anyone wants to contribute to your campaign or get involved in your campaign, where do they go to do that?
VoteShaneKrauser.com. That's Vote Shane Krauser. Last name is spelled K-R-A-U-S-E-R. So VoteShaneKrauser.com. You can go there, find all about my platform. You can find all of the events where I'll be speaking, and you can donate there as well.
Fantastic. So thank you so much for joining us today on the show. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Amber. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.